There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast that brings together the best bits of today's show from Monday, December the 9th. The UAE says it wants to be the easiest place in the world to do business. We're asking, what's the one thing you'd change?
Specifically, he's talking about the World Bank's ease of doing business ranking, 16th at the moment, but he says we can be number one by 2021. And he says, if New Zealand can do it, we can do it. Do we need to get Jacinda over, Brandy Scott?
Maybe we do. Look, those are ambitious targets to move 15 places up the ranking in just a couple of years. And we've been having a look this morning at what it is that we would need to do that. Because these reports break down, don't they? The areas where if it was a school report card, Richard could do better.
So the areas we do really, really well, for example, dealing with construction permits, brilliant, number three in the world. Getting electricity, number one in the world. Enforcing contracts, number nine in the world, and so on. Protecting minority investors, really good at that. But there are three areas that stand out where you'd say we could probably do or need to do better if we're going to become number one. You've got resolving insolvency, 80th in the world. Trading across borders is 92nd in the world, which surprised me because we're a trading hub here. But anyway, that's what the World Bank says. And getting credit, we're 48th in the world. And from the messages we've got in, Brandy, I'd say that getting credit is the one that's really getting people worked up this morning.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Credit for small and medium businesses is a biggie that people are saying. Hank's saying, look, even if you're not going to loan to small businesses, at least give them a bank account, even if you don't give them a checkbook. The ability to bank as a small company and to make that easier is probably the main one that people have got in touch with us. Other things that have come up are issues of bankruptcy and insolvency. And one that I've found particularly interesting, enforcing payments, by the way, is the other one that a lot of people are saying, making sure that if you've got a contract, if you're owed some money, that is honoured. Someone's made an interesting point. There isn't a name on this, which is a shame, because they've pointed out that when you're talking about the ease of doing business, you're not just talking about the ease of setting up a business, which is what we tend to focus on, and a lot of the metrics here about as well. You know, you get a new visa, 24 hours, 48 hours, you don't need to come to an office, you can do it all online, you know, one-stop shop type of aims, which is great. But we've had a listener point out, no one talks about closing down a business because that needs to be easy as well. And we're going to get a bit of an expert opinion now from Neil Petch, founder and chairman of VirtuZone. Neil, good morning. Lovely to speak to you. In your expert opinion, what kind of things could move the UAE from its place at the moment, number 16 in the ease of doing business rankings, up to number one?
Very good question. Well, firstly, we're moving in absolutely the right trajectory already. Once you've got your business started here, it's got to be about the most efficient place to run a global business. You get to keep all your revenues and invest in the company's growth. But actually, to get to number one, the Chamber of Commerce were very helpful. They organized a panel on the ease of banking. Banking's a massive part of this. VirtuZone, we help people set up company licenses. But really, what people want is a bank account, a phone that works, and somewhere to run their business. So we need to make that happen faster. So the first step is actually consumers all around the world, whether they be in Canada, Russia, India, wherever it is, helping them set up their business and get their bank account faster than is currently the case. Technology allows that. Brandy, you probably know your passport number because we've all had to fill out our passport number 100 times with a million forms here. If you can have that in one place using blockchain, then it makes it much faster so that everything can be done at once. And the dream is that someone can be in their office in Hong Kong, set up a UAE company account, get a bank account all in 10 minutes. Their iris is checked. The software knows that they're the right sort of person. And bang, everything is up and running. Technology allows that. What we have to do is form a bridge between the consumer and both immigration, who are responsible for visas, and central bank to make sure it's the right people and the right money.
It's interesting you mentioned banking because that far and away, Neil, is the one that people are messaging into us about this morning. As you say, getting that bank account up and running, but also then getting finance, particularly for small and medium companies? I mean, you work with a lot of SMEs. How easy are they finding it to get funds? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are three things. Firstly, there's getting the bank account in the first place, and there you need to have advice about, you know, setting up the right license so the banks can push that through. Once your bank account is up and running, then as you say, the great thing here is that it's a very, very low tax environment. And most free zones don't require that you legally have to audit your business. The flip side of that is banks are thus a little bit more scared to loan money to the SMB sector. So what companies such as VirtuZone does is try and make accounting available. Let's remember that startups probably can't afford an accountant. So, you need to have those services, and I would encourage anyone out there, get your accounts done from day one. If you're doing that, then finance is available, and also use companies to help bridge the loan. So again, it's about government-private partnership, which the Dubai government is really pushing, so that we can help these small companies get started and not have all the costs front-loaded.
Well, there you go. Neil Petch, the chairman and founder of VirtuZone, thanks so much for speaking to us.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's get some more on one of our top stories. In fact, two of our top stories now, but in particular, the fact that revenue at the UAE's top 10 banks soared by 25% in the most recent quarter. That's according to a new report from the consultancy Alvarez & Marsal, and we're delighted to be joined in the studio by the Managing Director, Ahsed Ahmed. Ahsed, thanks for being with us.
Good to be back.
So 25% increase in the top line for the UAE's top 10 banks in what is, I think we'd all agree, a fairly flat economy seems extraordinary. How have they achieved that?
It is. This number can be explained specifically because of the Emirates Bank NBD, Emirates NBD Deniz Bank merger. So the top line really reflects the merger and the Deniz Bank revenue number.
That's a big Turkish bank.
That's the big Turkish bank. And that's the deal which was in play for a number of months and now has concluded. If you remove the Deniz Bank thing, the effect, then it's about 7%.
Which is still good.
Which is still good.
Most business people running a business listening to this would snatch your hand off for 7% growth at the moment.
So I think it's 7% top line. But there are a number of underlying figures which are less attractive. One is, of course, there has been continued pressure on margins with the interest rate cuts that have happened in the last quarter. And I think we will see more of that impact in the final quarter. The second thing is there has been an increase in provisioning in the third quarter. So provisioning has gone up by about 33 basis points. So,
and but provisioning for bad loans and defaults.
Provisioning for bad loans, indeed. So it's about a billion dirhams in the third quarter. So that's also, I think, going to continue its impact in the fourth quarter. And the final thing is that, the cost-to-income ratios are also increasing. So, yes, top line is growing, but the underlying numbers a little bit more challenging.
So if we look to 2020 yes. and the prospects for the banking sector, it sounds like, and from reading your report, I got the sense that they will face significant pressures and headwinds in 2020.
So I think it's not going to be an easy year. I think the banks will continue to face pressures, both on margins and on costs. And on the cost side, there is this continuing emphasis on technology. There is the increasing emphasis on compliance. So, and the smaller banks, not in the top 10 perhaps, but the smaller banks will, I think, also face increased pressure. And perhaps we may even see a few more mergers.
Because we had a couple of big ones lately, haven't we? And one is constantly hearing rumours about other mergers happening,
yes.
either in Sharjah or in Abu Dhabi, perhaps even here in Dubai.
I think it's inevitable. We're just, by and large, far too many banks in the region, not just the UAE. And I think we're seeing mergers everywhere in the GCC.
Well, with that, Ahsed, let's pivot towards one of our other top stories this morning, which mm-hmm. is the UAE's ambition to be the easiest place in the world to do business. It wants yes. to be number one on the World Bank ranking. And the majority of the messages we're getting in are about funding. People say, I run an SME and the challenge I face is getting funding from my bank. Now, you used to run a bank here, didn't you?
I did.
National
I
Bank
did.
Of Fujairah. So you've been at the sharp end of this. What are your thoughts?
So, look, I think the SME business is globally not treated correctly. I think, and lending to SMEs, as my favorite topic is, that, you know, it's a full contact body sport. You can't do it from the outside. You have to be fully involved. And some banks have done it more successfully than others. But really, assessment of risk of an SME is not an easy, it's not an easy business. And banks tend to stay away from it because, you know, they have several other corporate business lines, and that's much easier to do. But I don't think that you can actually grow the economy without providing adequate funding to SMEs globally. You know, I've run banks in here. I used to run a bank in Kenya. And I've done a lot of banking in Canada. The situation is not dissimilar in all these economies.
So who does this fall on then? Because when banks are lending money, they're lending their depositors money. We saw what happened in 2015, 2016. Yes. A lot of banks, I mean, one that I knew in Sharjah, had done a lot of SME lending in 2012, 2013, yes. 2014. And then when the downturn hit, when the oil price fell, it got wiped out. I mean, hundreds of millions of dirhams, dollars of losses. So what do you do as a banker? Because you can't do that. You can't play roulette with other people's money, can you?
No, absolutely. I totally agree. And I don't think lending to SME is playing roulette. I think one has to be much more constructive in the way you approach it. And today, with technology where it is, I think there are many other avenues which are opening up and doing to SME. But I think for an economy such as UAE or perhaps elsewhere in the GCC as well, we need to see specialized SME institutions to come up. And I think and Canada has done that successfully, and so have other economies. So if we have a specialized SME institutions, which just not only provide the funding, but also provide the governance mechanism to SMEs, which is often lacking, which often provide them the route to market, the go-to-market philosophy, then I think that is a possible solution to look at.
With some kind of government guarantee for those loans?
There can be a government guarantee, and there's lots of government guaranteed programs. In Singapore, there's many. There's across in the West.
We have them here as well for Emirati SMEs, don't we?
We have some for Emirati SMEs, but I think perhaps one should have a wider outlook, because a lot of the businesses here are expat-owned, and they contribute significantly to the GDP of the country. So, yes, I think that there is room to do more.
20 seconds. Fintech solutions, things like Beehive, peer-to-peer lending and others, a significant part of the solution, or will they remain niche?
They will become an increasing part of the solution. I think because there is Beehive and there's some other solutions that have come up. Conclusively, the regulators in DFSA and EDGM are also now licensing companies which have foreign exchange services, for example, which may impact the market here. So I think they will become an increasing part.
Asad, great talking to you. Appreciate your time. Asad Ahmed is the Managing Director of Alvarez & Marsal.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Size Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
Starting, Brandy Scott, with Airbnb.
You gotta fight for your right to
party. Yeah, or not, as the case may be. Airbnb has come out with a new list of guest standards that are going to come into play in early 2020. They include excessive noise from parties, loud music, or other sources, having unauthorized guests at a property that is being rented, unauthorized parking at a property that's being rented, unauthorized smoking at the property that's being rented, and trashing the property. Which you think would go without saying. Trashing the property so much that it necessitates excessive cleaning. They're also formalising the ban on open invite parties. There's a number of reasons for this. One of them being that Airbnb is getting ready to go public next year. So it is putting a lot of measures in place. There was a shooting at a Halloween party that was in an Airbnb that obviously made a lot of headlines, and I suspect that that is one of the reasons as well. But Airbnb seems to be doing a bit of housekeeping, because originally the model was very much that you had your own house rules. Airbnb was just the middleman. It wasn't the enforcer so much. It was only the platform.
So if I rent your Airbnb, it's up to you to tell me what the rules are rather than Airbnb to tell me what the rules are. And if Brandy Scott was okay with parties, then Airbnb wouldn't get in the way of that.
Exactly. I mean, last month they came out and said that they're going to be, you know, starting to verify the accuracy and all the rest of it of all the photos that are put up on Airbnb for properties that are lent. Also, safety, cleanliness and all the rest of it. So Airbnb becoming much more of a... not quite a regulator, but certainly getting much more involved in the renting, who does what and what they actually get when they turn up.
And I think they have to. I mean, what do you make of these sharing platforms? And there are many of them. Uber, Airbnb are some of the more high-profile ones, but there are others. I don't think that they can. They're so prominent in society these days. I don't think they can just wash their hands of their responsibilities of what happens in the car or in the property.
Yeah, no, I completely and utterly agree with you. Whether it is Uber, whether it is, I mean, we've spoken to other sort of sharing platform, as it were, economy models here, where people have said, oh, well, what people are actually transporting or what they're actually storing. And, you know, because there's a number that allow you to store stuff in other people's places, or, you know, use bits of other people's houses, or carry packages for other people, or use bits of their luggage when they're traveling overseas, whatever it is. And there has kind of collectively been a feeling that, well, you know, what the two parties agree is up to them. I do think that the platforms in the middle, who are, by the way, the people making the money, I mean, Airbnb's IPO is one that's being looked forward to by markets. It's going to raise a wadge of cash. I'll actually have a look and see how much they expect it to raise. If you're making money off it, as far as I'm concerned, you therefore have a commercial interest in it, and therefore you have responsibility.
My newsmaker this morning, well, I've got two for the price of one this morning. And one of them is a friend of the show, His Excellency Abdullah Luta, General Director of the Federal Competitiveness and Statistics Authority here in the UAE, the snappily named Federal Competitiveness and Statistics Authority. But he's a newsmaker because he's thrown down the gauntlet, well, to the world, but more specifically New Zealand, saying the UAE wants to be number one in the World Bank's ease of doing business list. Now, the UAE's been climbing that ladder for the past decade or so diligently, and it's now at number 16, which is not too shabby at all. But he says there are so many things that need to be done. He says we need to maintain that fire and not rest. He was speaking to reporters yesterday, and he's quoted as saying it's going to happen by 2021, which is not far off.
No, that's right. Right, so 15, climbing up
13 months away.
Yeah, 15 places in a year. We've had a number of people message in because we were asking you when we opened the show this morning, what would you do then? If it was your job to get the UAE from 16 to 1, what would you do? What needs to be tweaked, amended, changed, thrown out, brought in, what have you? And some really interesting points that people have brought in, a lot saying, look, banking is the area that has a long way to go. And we're particularly interested from hearing from business owners, people who've sort of, you know, set up a smaller business here. Someone else sort of saying enforcing contracts is one of the things that they would look at. Someone else saying the ease of doing business, establishing a business is one thing, but closing down a business is another as well. That actually does come into the ease of doing business, where logistically you can face some challenges.
I'm looking at the World Bank's page on the UAE at the moment and some of the strengths and weaknesses, and it has various categories. As you say, starting a business is one of them, getting electricity is another, protecting minority investors, trading and so on, various criteria. We do really, really well in a number of them. We're top of the tree in terms of getting electricity. Dealing with construction permits, number three in the world. We're also really good at enforcing contracts, it says, which maybe surprises me a little bit, but number nine in the world. But we're all top 20 for pretty much everything. But there are three that stand out as areas with room for improvement. Number one is getting credit, where we're 48th in the world. Number two is trading across borders, where we're 92nd in the world. Find that hard to believe. And resolving insolvency, number 80. And this is something that frankly speaking, we've been speaking about on the Business Breakfast for the past 15 years, haven't we? Resolving insolvency. Our insolvency laws have never been up there with the best Chapter 11s in the world, have they?
Well, I mean, funny enough, we have seen on a personal front at least a lot more movement in what happens with bankruptcy and bankruptcy protection in just the last couple of months here. I don't know if that would factor into the ease of doing business, and presumably that's happened since this report was put together.
Exactly, and there are reports coming out all the time. We have got the 2020 report is already out. So we have got these rankings. New Zealand is number one, followed by Singapore and Hong Kong. They're often up there, aren't they, those two? You have, you know, Denmark is there as well, going down the list. The United States is sixth, so still a relatively good place to do business. The United Arab Emirates, as we mentioned, is 16th as well. And so we go down the list.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We are celebrating a very special anniversary today. A hotel anniversary, 40 years of Le Méridien Dubai, or what old timers might call the Le Méridien Airport Hotel. Now, that hotel was originally run, its opening general manager was one Gerald Lawless.
Blast from the, not just the past, but the present as well.
Well, exactly. And I tell you what, he's got some stories about that time too.
Well, we didn't open the hotel until September 1979, so it was a full year after we had actually arrived. And the ground floor area of the Dubai International, as it was in, is a great place for, it's just a great lobby area. And we had decided that we would have international buffets to celebrate. We had about almost 3,000 people at the opening party, so it was nearly all of Dubai came to the party. And we decided it would be nice. I was probably the lowest level you can get in management. I was the assistant food and beverage manager, the guy who does all the work, all the legwork. So I said it would be very nice to, we would have an Arabic buffet, and that I thought, well, why wouldn't we have a camel behind the buffet? So I had a friend, a Dubai friend, and I said, could you get me a camel? He said, yeah, sure. So we drove out past the airport on the Kawanese Road, which, you know, wasn't, we didn't have to go very far to be in the desert, drove over a few sand dunes, and came to a small house in the desert with the man of the house sitting outside with his wife drinking some kahwa, and we all joined in, had the coffee. And then he took us in his lovely Range Rover over more sand dunes to a little pen where there was a camel. So he said, would that do for the buffet, to bring it to the buffet, to have a live camel? And he said, I said, yeah, it looks fantastic. And I said, will we arrange to send a truck to collect it? He said, no, no, no. He said, I'll ride the camel. So he rode the camel on the Saturday afternoon down the airport road. You can imagine doing it today. And when he stopped the camel outside and sat it down, he said, you're going to bring it inside? He said, yes. He said, OK, why don't you ride it in? So I hopped on the camel with my tuxedo and everything, and he led the camel in, and we put the camel down behind the buffet. I don't know what the health and safety people would say today, but it was quite an experience.
Well, I don't know if the current general manager is going to be riding a camel in to celebrate the 40th birthday of Le Méridien Dubai, but we are joined by him now, Sean Parsons, the current complex general manager at Le Méridien Dubai Complex. Sean, it's lovely to see you. Emma Brooke, congratulations. How are you all celebrating?
Well, we this year decided, rather than, I heard Gerald talking about a party where they had 3,000 people, we decided this year, in the interests of community service, to donate what we had allocated for our 40th year party to the Dubai Accessible Tourism Summit. So we thought we'd do and give something back to the community this year after 40 years of service. And we sponsored, we were the major sponsor of the Dubai Accessible Tourism Summit in November at the World Trade Center, which focuses on tourism, accessible tourism for people around the world and moving Dubai towards that goal in 2020.
Why that particular event? Why that particular goal?
Well, there's 1.2 billion travellers worldwide every year, and about 10% of those, according to research, is challenged in terms of accessibility. So that's about 120 million tourists globally that have accessible or issues with regards to disabilities. And Dubai, in line with the 2020 vision, is creating an awareness and a drive towards making Dubai more accessible for tourists. And being so close to the airport, and the patron is His Highness Sheikh Ahmed, we decided to get on board with that.
What are you doing to make the hotel accessible?
We've had a number of different audits, and quite honestly, accessible tourism is more than what meets the eye. Accessible tourism these days can also be about making sure that your rooms and your facilities are accessible for people potentially with autism. So we're looking at how we can make our rooms and our facilities more accessible for those on the autism spectrum, looking at how we can introduce sensory facilities and so on and so forth, but also using the audit that we had with some of the people staying with us to make sure that our basic functionality is there for those that are people of determination.
How do you keep a hotel current and relevant for 40 years, particularly in a market where we've got a new hotel opening every 5 minutes?
Yeah, we have to continue evolving, and that's probably, you know, something that you hear a lot of. This last 3 years, we've been renovating the hotel after 40 years. We've been doing a lot of work and spending a lot of money on introducing new concepts and new aspects to the hotel, and we finished that in October. We've introduced new food and beverage outlets. We've renovated old ones, outlets like Yolumba that have been around for many years. We have to regenerate, and we have to go through and make sure that we're keeping it relevant for the current market.
Was that the original brunch?
That was, well, I think the Fairmont might have something to say about that. Okay. Spectrum. It was either Spectrum on one or it was us. But it's certainly, I think, one of the most popular in the city still.
Well, and certainly for a lot of people who would have worked closer to the Creek 5, 10, 15 years ago, Richard and myself included, it is part of the history.
I was a member of the leisure club, the gym. You've just reminded me. Because my first job was at a publishing company in Garhoud, and it was like a 2 or 3 minute drive then. So I was.
I've spent many an evening in the courtyard. What are the challenges that come with running an older property?
The challenges, I think we're actually probably quite blessed in the sense that we've been around for 40 years, so we've got an enormous amount of goodwill. I think probably one of the biggest challenges is keeping, as you said earlier, keeping it relevant, making sure that you're keeping up with what is happening in the city. There's a lot more competition these days, and therefore a lot more choices for people to you know, go out and dine or stay in hotels around the city. So it's really keen to make sure that you stay on top of your training, stay on top of your staff focus, make sure that you're developing a really strong culture in the organisation, and then, of course, having the product to keep people coming back.
Which is actually a really interesting question. I mean, how do you make a property that's been around for a while somewhere that staff, particularly younger staff, want to work rather than somewhere newer and maybe, you know, a bit more of an upcoming brand?
Well, we're lucky in that our accommodation for our staff is right across the road. So people that work with us don't have to get in a bus and commute 30 minutes to and from the hotel. We keep, at the same time, putting in facilities into our accommodation and focusing on activities in our accommodation to keep our staff engaged. We have a concept called the Associates Champions League, where we have teams in the hotel and they compete against each other in various games. We focus on that throughout the course of the year, and at the same time we raise funds for charity, for the Road to Awareness, which is a Marriott charity in the Middle East and Africa, which provides funds to Al Jalila Foundation. So we're always looking at how we can continue to drive engagement with our associates, not only in work but outside of work.
Well, let's talk about expansion, because Rich and I obviously are referring to a hotel, Le Méridien Airport, and you're now Le Méridien Dubai Complex. Where are you going? What are you adding in there?
Well, I think if we go back to 2014, we added near enough to 300 additional rooms with the construction of the new tower, which is called our Royal Club Wing. So that means we now have 580 keys in Le Méridien Dubai. We have another hotel about 5 kilometres away, which is Le Méridien Fairway. Next year, in the last quarter of next year, we'll be introducing 4 new hotels into the complex.
Where are you going to fit those?
Two are directly behind us in Garhoud, and they'll be in the Select Serve arena, the Select Serve brands being Aloft and Element. Aloft is powered by W, so it's very much a hip and trendy brand, but in the Select Serve arena. And Element is powered by Western, and that's a longer stay product. And then we're also opening 2 of the same brand down towards Port Rashid in an area of Dubai called Al Rafa.
Do you know what? That's really interesting. We speak to a lot of people here about whether or not we're looking at saturation with hotel keys at the moment. And you're opening 4 new hotels.
Yeah, another 600 keys. So we're basically doubling our inventory in the complex by this time next year. We will have all of those hotels open. But as I say, targeting a completely different market, Select Serve, low service. You know, the staff per available key is going to be reduced. The Element brand is about longer stay, extended stay. So that will be more like apartments. Again, targeting a different customer base. But in the airport, hopefully helping us also target more groups in that area.
Quick word about December, Sean. It seemed hard. Can't believe it's a year since you were last sitting here with me and Malcolm when we were talking about the Christmas and New Year period. And you were very frank and honest then and said, look, there is increased competition. How was last year in terms of Christmas and New Year and associated gatherings? And how is this year shaping up?
This year's shaping up really well. Last year was really successful. We haven't moved our prices. If anything, we've probably reduced them a little bit. Our Christmas and New Year's Eve bookings, talking to the team yesterday, up about 30% year on year. So we're really happy with that. New Year's Eve is a challenge. We had a concert last year, which we don't have this year because of some challenges in Lebanon. The artists aren't willing to come out. But Christmas right now, Yalamba is fully booked. The Meridian Village Terrace is close to fully booked. And then we've got another, 15 outlets across the hotel that we still have to fill. But I'm pretty sure that they'll fill over the next couple of weeks before Christmas. New Year's Eve, also going strong. So we're seeing really good connection with the festive season.
Sean Parsons, General Manager at Le Meridian Dubai Complex. Thank you much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Richard and I will be back on air tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.